Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
When voters say that healthcare is their top priority in this election, and a lot of them do, what are they really saying? First of all, is it just a reflex? Because Canadians derive a big part of our national identity from universal healthcare. It is a thing that we have and America doesn't. The father of our healthcare system was named the greatest Canadian of all time. Go and pose a question about Canadians' experience with their healthcare on social media, and you will be flooded with anecdotes, most of them wonderful, and a few of them horrifying, about people's experiences in our hospitals and doctors' offices. And the easiest way to understand why we're so passionate about our healthcare is to listen to Americans talk about it.
If there's one thing that no one can agree on in Washington, it's a healthcare plan. But everyone does have an opinion, including those who say Canada should be our role model.
You have a nation bordering on the United States, two nations that are probably as close together in so many respects as any two nations in the world, a conservative prime minister, and yet there is no effort to move to an American healthcare system. I would say to my colleagues, there's not a better example.
So yes, Canadians care about this issue. It is top of mind. It's clearly a passion. But does it matter in a federal election? And if so, how much? Because here's the thing. While federal elections might help shape the big picture, long-term vision of healthcare in Canada, that's a very different thing from the healthcare most Canadians are talking about when you ask them what they love or hate about our system and what government should do to fix it. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story, and there are 4 days to go before Canada votes. Andre Picard is a health reporter with the Globe and Mail. Hey, Andre.
Hi.
When Canadians cite healthcare as their top issue, and a lot of them have in this election and others, what are they typically talking about? What are they referring to?
I think when people talk about healthcare, they're thinking about access to healthcare, so getting the care that they need promptly and in an affordable manner and a decent, you know, being treated decently. So I think it's about access more than anything else.
And how much of a role, because what we're trying to understand is of the promises made over the last few weeks, what will actually have an impact in Canadians? So how much of a role does the federal government actually play in providing sort of the on-the-ground access services you mentioned?
Yeah, so they don't play a large role for most Canadians. Healthcare delivery is provincial. The federal government's responsible for delivery, but with fairly specific audiences, the Indigenous population, the armed forces, RCMP, prisoners. So Ottawa has some delivery, but it's very specific groups.
So what does Ottawa do then in terms of delivering health care to, you know, the average voter in a province where their provincial government is by and large looking after their health care? Because they seem to care, people seem to care a lot about what Ottawa can and doesn't do.
Yeah, so people are not always clear on that division of powers, but Ottawa has two major roles for most people, and one of them is the transfer of money. So they fund healthcare to about 22% now of healthcare is funded federally. So their transfer is about $40 billion a year to the provinces. So that's the main role. And then the second role, which is one that the parties debate among themselves, is trying to influence provincial policy with that money. So do you target the money or do you just write a check and say the provinces do as you wish? And that's where the differences exist.
With that in mind, then, what are some of the biggest differences between the proposals from the various parties?
Well, I think if you look at the big issue in healthcare these days is pharmacare. So we've been talking about right. this for many years. So I think the promises have come, or lack of promises have revolved around that. So the NDP and the Greens have both made massive pharmacare promises. They're going to have a national pharmacare program funded coast to coast, about $10 billion a year, as much as $27 billion up front. So massive investments. So that's the big one for the smaller, you know, NDP Greens, parties that probably don't have a lot of chance of governing, so they can make these wild promises.
Right.
Then we go to the Liberals, who've actually taken a very cautious approach. They say they're going to spend $6 billion over 4 years on health issues, with pharmacare being the primary one. So they say they want to kickstart the idea of a national program. And the Conservatives actually want nothing to do with pharmacare. Their philosophical belief is that's a provincial jurisdiction and they should stay out of it. So that's the big one.
What about in terms of the transfer payments to provinces? Is this basically every party promising to keep them the same or increase them?
Yeah, that's a good example of why we don't have a lot of healthcare discussion in a federal election, is there's violent agreement among the parties that they're all going to do exactly the same thing. So they've all promised to increase the transfer payments, help the health transfer by 3% a year. So nothing to debate there among them. But whether that's a good number or not is, you know, for Canadians to decide, but they've all sort of promised the same thing.
How do the parties themselves use the fact that Canadians cite healthcare as an issue among themselves when they're campaigning?
Well, healthcare federally is just sort of a rhetorical device. Everyone loves Medicare. You know, it's almost our religion. And you'll hear that in passing, you know, during the leaders' debates. It was actually noteworthy there was no health section in the debates, and that was telling. But of course, everybody got in their mention of how they love Medicare and they're going to protect that. So it's in fairly vague terms the discussion tends to take place.
I feel like I've heard a lot of rhetoric provincially, for sure, with a lot of governments moving conservative provincially, but also in this campaign about how the Conservatives will move towards privatization. And I don't think that any of the Conservative proposals actually do that. Am I right?
No, nothing that they say explicitly, and they are very careful to say that they're not interested in that. And I think that's true. Canadians sort of have this dislike for the notion of privatization, even though we have, you know, the paradox is we have a lot of private health care in Canada, more than most countries, but we have this notion that we don't like it. So no government, nobody who wants to get elected is going to come out and say, we want to privatize hospitals or have doctors that you pay for. The Conservatives are not saying that, and neither is anyone else. The closest is the People's Party, the fairly marginal party, Maxime Bernier. So they're saying they want more private health care. But beyond that, no one else is really talking about that.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
When we talk about promising more private health care, what would actually be available in Canada? Like, how set in stone is our universal health care, and what could governments do to get around it?
Well, what we have in Canada is a system that's quite out of date. So it was created in the 60s where hospital and physician services are 100% publicly funded. And then everything else and they're covered under the legislation. So there's not really any private care in those domains. There's no private hospitals in Canada. There's no very little private delivery of medical care. There's some exceptions, but those are almost 100% private. And then everything else is all over the map. So we have tons of, you know, private drug plans, physiotherapy, hearing aids, dental, all this stuff is private to varying degrees. And that's very different from other countries. So, when we talk about this rhetoric about privatization, it doesn't really mean anything unless you talk about specifics.
In terms of specifics, beyond pharmacare. Are there any other ways that, any other things, I guess, that voters who would rank healthcare as their top priority should be paying attention to when they look at the platforms?
Well, I think there's a large absence of talk about long-term care, seniors care. So that's a big issue in Canada. We talk about provincially in Ontario, they use the terminology hallway medicine. So there's all this waiting in the system. And we know that the problem is not, it's upstream. So we just don't have a place for people who are older and frail and need care. We don't have places for them in the community. So they end up in hospitals and it just creates this logjam. So I think we've really missed out on this a serious discussion of how we can fund longer-term care, how we can keep people in the community. And I think there's a lot of opportunity there for the parties, but he chose not to go there, unfortunately.
How dire is that situation? I mean, we've done a couple of podcasts about various provinces and aging population and its impact on infrastructure has come up a few times.
Oh, it's a massive problem. Just in Ontario alone, I think the last numbers I saw, there's about 35,000 people on the wait list for a long-term care bed. So it's a massive problem. And it's like many things, it's odd that it's not getting discussed in any serious way.
Well, one of the other things that I wanted to ask you that's kind of adjacent to that is you've done some work, and I've seen some stuff elsewhere, about issues that are adjacent to healthcare that aren't technically included in that. So, for instance, you wrote a piece recently about homelessness and how and the role it plays in our healthcare system.
Yeah, so the reality is most things that impact our health have nothing to do with medicine. So they have to do with income transfers, you know, basic income, housing, education. And, you know, we talked at the outset, we don't talk a lot about health during federal campaigns, but we don't talk at all about social services. And those are what really impact the health of the population more broadly. So that's another area that's really quite neglected. The only thing I really saw in the campaigns, in the promises, was the NDP made quite a large promise of $13 billion for affordable housing, so for social housing, and that's significant. The Liberals have invested in this over the last few years, but as far as I know, they haven't made any new big promises.
What happens in regard to homelessness and its impact on the healthcare system that could potentially save us a lot of money?
Well, you know, it's very, very costly to have someone living on the street. They use all kinds of other social services, emergency rooms, shelters, etc. So I was just writing recently about some research that showed a homeless person you'll see sleeping on a grate in Toronto, that person will cost the social services system about $160,000 a year. So the question becomes, how can we spend that money more wisely to make their lives better? And, you know, there's many ways. And one of them, the main one, is this philosophy called housing first. If you give someone a home, somewhere to live, it's much easier to start dealing with the other problems they may have, a substance use disorder, mental illness. It's hard to treat any of those things if you don't even have a roof over your head or anything to eat.
How come this isn't part of the healthcare debate if so much money is going to taking care of these folks and we're also fretting about hallway medicine at the same time? This clogs the system too.
Yeah, so why isn't it a bigger discussion? I think it's, you know, we get caught up in minutia. A lot of that is seen as provincial issues. So as we kind of sidestep it. And I think the other thing is these are very complex issues. There's not an easy solution. You know, I can write the solution to homelessness is housing, and that's true. But beyond that, there's a lot of stuff that has to be done. You know, we have to figure out why are people on the streets? How do we treat their mental illness? So these are very complex issues. They don't lend themselves well to sound bites during an election campaign.
If there was one issue in particular related to healthcare and the work and reporting you've done that you wish Canadians understood better when they're trying to decide who to vote for, what would it be?
Oh, boy. Well, I guess I wish that they understood the system better, that they just didn't fall for this bland rhetoric about, you know, private is bad, public is good. We all love Medicare because it's, you know, it's a mixed system. It's very a complex mixture. In this campaign in particular, I think the other issue that we didn't talk about that's really been neglected is the opioids crisis. So the worst public health disaster in Canada in many decades, thousands of people dying a year. And, you know, each party has made some minor promises to spend more money, but really no discussion. I didn't hear the word opioids come up during any of the leaders' debates. And this is a severe public health problem that we haven't seen for forever. And it's unfortunate they're just saying, oh, we're going to spend a little bit more money to do what we're doing now, which is not working tremendously well.
That was on my list to ask you about, because we've talked to people across the country and the impact in neighborhoods has been tremendous. And yet I can't remember a single, you know, new policy proposal through this entire campaign.
Yes, I think as far as what I looked up, each of the parties has promised to spend some money on dealing with the opioids issue. The Liberals, again, have done a fair bit in the last few years. They've come a long way, but, you know, we still, this is not being treated as the crisis that it is. The Greens have said they want to decriminalize all drugs. So that's the most radical proposal I've seen, but it's one that many academics say is ultimately the solution. You know, as long as until we have safe drugs on the streets, people are going to keep dying. And the conservatives at the other end of the spectrum feel that that's enabling people with drug use. If they're elected, people fear they may try and shut down some of the supervised injection sites, etc. So again, there should be fodder for debate there because there are major differences, but we just don't seem to get to that in the campaign.
We talked to Mike Eppel, who's a business reporter, yesterday about affordability as an issue. And one of the things he was kind of grappling with is the idea of things like pharmacare, which would potentially help a lot of people save money in the long run, would not necessarily help balance any budget whatsoever in the short term. And the policies you're talking about with regards to homelessness and kind of preventative care seem very similar in that we're trying to talk to people about the long-term impact of something that they're feeling right now. And I wonder, how do you broaden the healthcare discussion so that it becomes more than wait times or the service I'm getting on the ground when I go to the doctor?
Yeah, I think that we have to have the discussion of on a couple levels. One is we're paying for this. You know, we're paying for homelessness. We're paying for a lack of affordable housing. And the question is, do we want to pay it from our left pocket, the public treasury, or do we want to pay it from the right pocket privately? So we're going to pay for these issues one way or another. So we have to figure out how to do it, what's most effective, what will give us the best bang for the buck. Other countries, when I look at European countries, they invest more in, you know, the collectivity, spend more on social programs and less on sickness care. So in Canada, we tend to let people degenerate and get sick, and then we treat them really well. But, you know, we have too many of them to treat, so they fill our hallways. So how do we invest in that prevention? And then I think the larger philosophical issue is the one I mentioned in passing. Do we believe in the collectivity first, or do we believe in individuality first? And sort of, and Canada's kind of smunched between that U.S., you know, the individual reigns supreme, and the European or Nordic view of the collectivity is important. And we kind of are on the fence, and we do neither well. So that's, I think, our challenge as a country philosophically is where we have to figure out where we sit on the spectrum.
Right. And how do we currently stack up against other countries with universal medicine?
Well, we spend far less than most countries on public health care. So we have, as I mentioned in passing before, we spend a lot on private care, although we think we don't. So we don't spend our tax dollars as wisely as other countries, I don't think. And then the big difference is not so much healthcare, but it's social services. So if I take a country like Denmark, 27% of their GDP is spent on social services, so social housing, et cetera. And in Canada, it's only 13%. So not surprisingly, Denmark has better health outcomes. They have lower health spending because they make sure people are healthy and taken care of in the first place. But again, it all comes down to a philosophical view that people feel a responsibility for those around them more than we do here. You know, the notion of someone sleeping on a grate, I can't imagine ever seeing that in Copenhagen, to be honest.
Thanks, Andre. Andre Picard, health reporter at the Globe and Mail. That was The Big Story. If you want more, they are all at thebigstorypodcast.ca, including countless election episodes. You can also talk to us about all things election and, please God, other things too, at thebigstoryfpn. We'd love to hear from you. And you can rate and review us in the Apple Store. You can also find us absolutely everywhere your favorite podcasts are distributed. That's Apple and Google and Stitcher and Spotify and Podcatcher. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk more politics tomorrow.
Hi there. I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.